All right, movie retrospective time. Here's another one that's been on the list for a really long time. I can't remember even who requested it because it was such a long time ago. This is the 1980 movie, The Ninth Configuration. This is probably one of the weirdest movies that we've done on this show, and that's
Yeah.
saying something.
I couldn't really get into it. It's about an insane asylum, a military insane asylum in this old fucking spooky castle in the middle. There's a lot of shit about the movie that doesn't really, to me, didn't really jive. It's got all spooky statues in it, a bunch of crazy dudes. I've seen it a couple times. This thing is the second time I've seen it. I was probably about 20 minutes into it, and I'm like, man, I gotta check out this movie. So Jenny's gonna do most of the review. I just.
This is a really weird. I'm not even really sure what genre I would place this in. It's kind of like it starts out as almost kind of like a farce, like a
I
comic.
was gonna say absurdist.
Yeah, it is very absurdist, but then
Yeah.
as it goes on, it kind of gets more philosophical and then
Yeah.
almost becomes a horror movie, sort of.
Yeah.
So it's like a very strange film. It's kind of like, I don't even know if they don't really make shit like this anymore.
All-star cast too. It's got
Damn,
everybody's in it.
everybody's in
Everybody's
this
in it.
shit. Yeah. Oh my God. There's like so many like awesome people. Stacy Keach is in this. Tom Atkins has a very small role. What's that dude's name? Stacy Keach is in it. Ed Flanders is in it. Just fucking everybody.
If you've been
Everybody.
around as long as
Scott Wilson is in
if
this.
you've been around as long as we have, you just recognize everybody in it. You're like, oh, that's a dude from there. Oh, that's a guy
Yeah,
from over
Jason
there.
Miller,
Yeah.
from The Exorcist is in it.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, so the history of how this one came about is actually quite fascinating. So this was actually written and directed by William Peter Blatty, who obviously wrote the book The Exorcist, which was directed by William Friedkin. Now, this story was initially, he initially wrote it as a novel in 1966 called Twinkle Twinkle Killer Kane. Now, in its initial iteration, I haven't read either because he rewrote it later, but I haven't read either version of the novel. Apparently, according to him, the 1966 version, which he said he liked a little bit better, was actually more of a straight up, like a comic sort of farce, that did have some stuff to say, about various philosophical issues about life, about, good and evil, religion, things like that, whether God exists and stuff. So he goes off, he writes that, and then he goes off and does The Exorcist with William Friedkin and everything. And then he decides that he kind of wants to rework this story. And so he rewrites the novel with essentially the same story, but I guess with a little bit more of a serious tone and like written a little bit better. So the novel, which he renamed The Ninth Configuration, came out in 1978. Now, he wrote a screenplay to go along with it. He wanted William Friedkin to direct it, who had directed The Exorcist, but in the end, he decided that he was going to do it himself. Now, I don't know if it was just because of how strange this movie is, but it kind of got passed around from studio to studio. Friedkin or William Peter Blatty didn't really want to work with I believe it was Warner Brothers who had done Exorcist because they had like fucked him out of some of the money, and so he was like still mad about it. So he took it somewhere else. I believe it was Paramount, and then they kind of sat on it for a while, and then it just kind of got passed around and didn't get made. So what he ended up doing finally was he ended up putting up $2 million of his own money. Like, he sold a house that he had that was must be nice. I'll just
Yeah.
sell this house and get $2 million to make
We
the
probably
movie.
had several.
Yeah, he did. So he got $2 million, and then he got PepsiCo to put up the other $2 million, which is why there is a prominent Pepsi vending machine in a scene in this movie, and also one of the characters mentions Fritos at
Yeah.
one point because I believe Fritos are also owned by PepsiCo. So, so this
This movie's
story,
something else,
it's
man.
so yeah, it's.
It's like the Dirty Dozen, 2001 A Space Odyssey, fucking some kind of vampire movie like the Dracula. It's kind of like The Exorcist, and it's kind of like what was the one with the damn all the religious hallucinations and shit, fucking
What, Altered States?
Altered States.
This reminds the tone of this reminds me a little bit of Altered States, except funnier.
Yeah, it's
bizarre. Altered States was a comedy.
And mixed with MASH.
Yeah.
The series MASH. Not so much Dirty Dozen, but MASH.
That kind of this is probably the closest thing in tone, because MASH was like, had a very serious, you know, military kind of thing going on. It's a philosophical shit. But then there was like absurdist humor in it as well. So maybe it's not as weird as I'm thinking it was.
Yeah, it had a big sci-fi kind of horror element in it. But I'm not sure I understood it. I really kind of stopped paying attention to it. I didn't really walk out on the movie. I just started to be like, man, I can't fight with this movie anymore. It's just
I can't fight with it.
It was doing stuff to me.
It was doing stuff to you?
Yeah. You know what I mean? It was doing stuff to me.
Well, as I said, this is going to be one of those movies.
One of the things that I started to shut down is that there was a lot of military stuff. Me being a military man, there was a lot of military inaccuracies in it. And a lot of fake military culture. As soon as they start faking the military culture, I check out. I'm like, oh, this wasn't written by somebody that knows what they're talking about. But a person who is not military wouldn't have a problem with this movie.
Yeah, probably not. And like I said, it's kind of set in... I'm not going to say that it's set in a dream world, but it's set in a way that's kind of outside of mainstream society so much that it can almost seem like an alternate universe, you know what I mean? Because it's so weird. Because, I mean, pretty much the whole thing takes place in an insane asylum.
I think it was supposed to be serious, but it was also supposed to make you kind of fucking disoriented.
Very disorienting.
It's supposed to make you question your own sanity.
Yeah, big time.
That's what it was supposed to do.
Big time.
But because they started playing a bunch of games about who's crazy.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not crazy. You can't fuck with me like that.
You can't fuck with me like that, movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop it. I don't know. I got to tell you, though, I'm always really... I don't really believe people when they say they're not crazy. I think everybody's a little bit crazy.
I'm not crazy.
I mean, you know what I mean? I feel like it's really the only craziest people that think they're not crazy.
Okay.
Everyone's a little bit crazy.
Keep telling yourself that.
This movie actually did end up, it got like a whole bunch of Golden Globe nominations. you know, it didn't win like Best Picture, but it did get Best Screenplay. And I will say that the first half of this movie, there are some really, really funny shit in this. One of my favorite things about it is that Jason Miller's character, he was the guy that played Damien Karras in The Exorcist, obviously. His craziness is that he is putting on a production of Julius Caesar, you know, the William Shakespeare play, but entirely with dogs. So him and the dude from Joe Spinell from fucking Maniac, who's playing his casting director, you know, that's a fun fact there. The whole thing of them, like the scenes of them trying to decide what breeds of dogs are like good for each part, like in Julius Caesar and in Hamlet and stuff like that, just cracked me the fuck up. Mm-hmm. I don't know, just that for some reason that was like very funny to me. But it's the whole first half is kind of like that. It's like, it's very farcical because... So the setup of it is that it's some undisclosed time in the mid to late 1970s. They don't really tell you what year it is. You're presuming that a lot of these are Vietnam War veterans that have come back and are not right. Now, it's the premise of the movie is that, you know, the military, the government or whatever has established these kind of secret insane asylums. Because I kind of feel like they suspect that these people, the soldiers that are coming back that are all like mentally messed up, that they're faking or something. So they're trying to determine whether these people are faking or not. So they have like these kind of secretive insane asylums, essentially. So the funny thing about this is that in the context of the movie, it's this huge like castle pretty much like in these mountains. And it's supposed to be in the Pacific Northwest. They don't tell you where, they just say Pacific Northwest generally. And there's one throwaway line in the movie where Ed Flanders says to the other guy, yeah, this castle was like some count or duchess or something, and she had the castle brought here, like brick by brick and built here. Because as we were saying, we're like, I don't know if there's any castles that look like that in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, this thing's huge. It's 20 stories tall.
The reason...
It's gigantic. It's gi-fucking-normous. You couldn't move it.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Even brick by brick, that would just take
It's
too
at
long.
Least 20. I was trying to measure it. It was at least 20 stories tall.
I mean, it's massive.
And, you know, it was the size of a fucking mountain. Well, and I think it might be a miniature.
No.
It's not? It's real?
It's, but it's not in the Pacific Northwest. Yeah. It's in Hungary.
Okay, yeah.
Because one of the stipulations of PepsiCo giving William Peter Blatty $2 million to make this movie was that they film it in Hungary because I guess they had some kind of, like...
Deal with
some filmmaking shit there, like some kind of block with their plant or whatever.
Whose castle was that?
I don't know. I don't know whose it was. It's cool, huge. But yeah, it's massive.
It's probably about 20 stories tall, quarter of a mile fucking across the bottom. It's big.
Yeah.
It's a whole city. It's what it looks like
much,
to me.
Pretty much, yeah.
You know?
But yeah, that is a real castle.
Yeah.
So but yeah, they shot it in Hungary.
Yeah, and it's like fucking maybe 15 stories of just walls. And then on the top, it's got all these domes and spires, and
it's cool as shit.
There's windows in it. I mean, gigantic.
Man, heating and cooling that thing would be a bitch.
No, I'm sure it's not. I'm sure it's not tempting. You have to put a window unit.
Then just stay in that room.
Just stay in that room. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's this asylum, and essentially there's all these soldiers there that are suffering from various mental illnesses and delusions. And it's super crazy. And it does seem like, I mean, when the movie begins, you see that it's just kind of this crazy, like nobody has any discipline or anything like that. Everyone's just running around acting like nutcases, like they are. And so at the beginning of the movie, they get, and I'm going to spoil this, okay? So if you've never seen it, then don't watch this if you want to watch it. Like I said, this is going to be a very off-putting or a very polarizing movie. Either you're going to be super into it, or you're just going to be like, no, I don't like it, or I don't get it, or anything like that. It's just a very, very polarizing movie. It's funny because I was watching a thing earlier that's very famous British film critic Mark Kermode, and this is actually one of his very favorite movies ever. A lot of British people seem to be into it. I don't know why. Like, a lot of British critics that I saw like really liked it. So at the beginning of the movie, they have Stacey Keach arrives playing ostensibly a psychiatrist who is coming there. He's a colonel, and he's coming there in order to kind of, help these dudes out. Now, when he gets there, he meets this other doctor guy who's played by Ed Flanders. His name is Colonel Fell. And he kind of like shows him the ropes and like introduces him to all these like crazy characters, one of whom has a jetpack, which they should have done more with that. It was just like one, there's like one throwaway, so like a jetpack, a guy in a Superman outfit. It's like they just do like all these little throwaway gags.
Movie's got bikers in it too. Bikers, astronauts, fucking soldiers, fucking crazy men, fucking every, it's just nuts.
It's all over the place. It's just, it's a crazy, crazy movie. There is, the thing about it though, is that as weird as it is, like as it goes on, because at the beginning it just seems super like shambolic and you have like no idea what's going on. Because in the beginning it just seems like a farcical like comedy, which it kind of is, but with kind of a dark edge to it. But as it goes on, it's like makes more and more sense. And fun fact, the astronaut that's in this, because one of the guys who's kind of like the main crazy person, I guess you could say, in the asylum, is a guy named Billy Cutshaw. And he was an astronaut who was supposed to go like on a moon mission, but before he was going into the, you know, into the launch pad or whatever, he had like a mental breakdown and like flipped out and like did all kind of crazy shit, and they kind of dragged him away and put him in this thing. So he's played by Scott Wilson, which people nowadays will know as Herschel from The Walking Dead. He was also in he was in Cold Blood. He was in like a whole bunch of shit back in the day. And so he's kind of like the main person that interacts with Stacey Keach's character, Colonel Kane. And the two of them kind of get into a lot of philosophical discussions about how Colonel Kane thinks that, you know, God exists because there's good in the world, whereas, Cutshaw is kind of an atheist and is very cynical and just thinks everyone is terrible and that the whole world is evil and there's no saving it and there's no redemption or anything. So that's kind of like the central theme of this movie, is the theme of, you know, even though there is so much evil in the world, it's about like, you know, the existence of God and stuff like, because this is William Peter Blatty who wrote The Exorcist. See, a lot of the themes carry over. And another, like I was going to say before, another fun fact, the astronaut in this, Cutshaw, William Peter Blatty has said that when he rewrote the novel, The Ninth Configuration, he made it so that that astronaut was the same one that was at the party in The Exorcist where Reagan comes down and says, you're going to die up there. that's supposed to be the same astronaut.
Yeah.
So he's like making it like a whole in-universe type of thing. But yeah, so they start having all these discussions about that. And meanwhile, you can see there's all this kind of crazy shit going on in the asylum. But then you can kind of see that Colonel Kane, who is ostensibly the psychiatrist and is supposed to have his shit together, that maybe he might not be entirely there either, because he started having these weird nightmares. He talks to Colonel Fell that it's like, oh, I keep having this same nightmare, but it's not my nightmare. Like, it belonged to my brother, who was a very famous, I guess he was like a famous like Marine in Vietnam or something like that, called Killer Kane, who had like killed a bunch of people, including like a little boy, and he'd like cut his head off. Like, he had done all these like atrocities. So he's saying that that guy's dead, that his brother is dead, but that he's having his nightmares because his brother told him about them, and it's like upsetting him a lot. And some of the inmates at the asylum start to speculate that maybe Colonel Kane is as crazy or crazier than they are. So, as I said, all of this kind of stuff goes on. Him and Cutshaw are having all these, you know, discussions about, you know, the meaning of life and, you know, good and evil and all this other stuff. They have this one discussion, which actually ends up being really important later on, over, you know, Colonel Kane saying that, you know, there's good in the world. Why don't you think that God exists because there's good in the world? Because Cutshaw is saying that's like, well, I don't think that there's a God because look at all the evil in the world. And so they're kind of like coming to head about that. And he said, well, look at all the self-sacrifice. Look at a soldier that throws himself on a grenade and like saves all his people. And, you know, the other guy saying, oh, that's bullshit. That's just like a reflex action. And so he's like trying to shoot down everything. And so Cutshaw says to him, he's like, think of one single, you know, episode from your own life where someone sacrificed their life for someone else. From your own life, I want something from your own personal experience. And Kane can't think of anything. And like I said, that's a very significant kind of scene, because it like plays out later on. So as it goes on, you find out that Colonel Kane, because this other inmate shows up, and this other inmate that shows up at the asylum turns out that he knew Killer Kane, who is supposedly, you know, this guy's brother. But in actuality, I'm sure no one will be surprised to know that it wasn't his brother. It was actually him. So he was the guy that he had like killed all these innocent people, like women and children, they're implying. They do show a scene of him like with a kid's head, like holding a kid's head or whatever that he's cut off. And what he did was so atrocious that he essentially split off into two personalities. So like he basically took the evil part of him and killed it. And now he became his actual brother, who it turned out is Colonel Fell, the doctor who they were kind of pretending they didn't know each other. But Colonel Fell has actually been in charge of him the whole time, like looking after him. So he is trying to redeem himself by saying that guy is not there anymore. That guy's dead now. And now I'm trying to help people. You know what I mean? Because he's trying to help all these you know, other inmates in this mental asylum. And the one thing that he's doing, and he got this idea from Jason Miller's character talking about the dogs and about Hamlet and everything. And he had a theory about Hamlet, that Hamlet was essentially neither really insane or pretending to be insane. He's just basically like, he's pretending to be insane to keep from really going insane. And that gives Kane the idea that maybe all of these, maybe that will help the men in the asylum if we just indulge their, you know, delusions. So basically he does that. Like, he gets all this money. Like, there's one group of them, it's like, we want to reenact the Great Escape. So he gets all the stuff. He gets Nazi uniforms. He gets like all this, and everyone has to pretend. Everyone has to like play along. And like the one guy that's like, you know, the artist, and like they give him like shit for, like, for Michelangelo so he can paint on the ceiling. And it's like they just, you know, they just indulge all their delusions in the hopes that it will make them get better, which is essentially what they're doing with Kane, because they're letting him think that he's a psychiatrist and that he's helping these people because they think that that will make him get better, like, after he, like, dissociated because of, like, all the people that he killed and he had, like, a fucking freak out and a trauma about it. So, as it goes on, once Cutshaw, who has actually, him and Kane have developed a friendship, but once Cutshaw finds out that Kane is actually Killer Kane, who, like I said, is very well known for his atrocities, he flips out, he escapes from the asylum, he ends up at this bar, and then all these bikers there recognize him, because apparently it was kind of a big news story, like this astronaut that flipped out, like, before going to the moon or whatever. And so they start, like, taunting him and, like, pouring beer on him, like, beating the shit out of him. So Kane actually comes to his rescue, and the bikers start, because there's a whole bunch of bikers and there's only two of them, so the bikers start, like, fucking with them, and essentially Kane lets these bikers, like, humiliate him, because he thinks that then the bikers will let them leave. But then finally it gets to a point where the bikers are actually going to rape Cutshaw. And that makes Kane snap back into Killer Kane mode, and he essentially kills all the bikers pretty much with his bare hands. So they take him back to the asylum, and, you know...
It looked paranormal to me.
I think they were kind of... I don't even know...
Those people were fucking fine.
Some paranormal shit going on in this, like I said, with the existence of God, because there's another conversation that Cutshaw and Kane have... Because, like I said, about the whole, you know, does God exist issue, where Cutshaw says to Kane, he's like, you know, if you die before me, give me a sign that there's an afterlife, because I want proof. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that actually does happen at the end, where he gives him a sign that he actually is, like, contacting him for me. So there is a little bit of a paranormal element to this. So I think the thing about it, they're trying to essentially make Kane... like a Christ figure a little bit, not exactly, but in the way that, you know, he goes and eventually kills all these people to save Cutshaw. And then when he comes back to the castle and the cops want to take him, cause they're like, look, we know he was provoked, but he just straight up murdered like a whole bar full of people. You know, so we have to take him into custody, but he talks to Cutshaw. And basically they have a conversation because one of Kane's things that he always keeps asking Cutshaw is like, why did you, you know, flip out? Why did you go mental or pretend to go mental or whatever it was before you went to the moon? Like, what was the problem? And he would never tell him, like, throughout the whole movie. And then finally at the end of the movie, he says, that he was afraid he would go out in space. He would die all alone. And there was just nothing out there, like no God, no nothing. And so that terrified him more than anything. So he essentially just had like a flip out and he didn't want to go. So after he admits that, then Kane, as it turns out, he ends up killing himself. And he's doing it because... he's like, I want this to shock you back into sanity, essentially. He called it shock treatment. And he's like, and two, this is an example from my personal life of somebody sacrificing themselves for another, meaning that God exists, right? Mm. So that was kind of the conversation that they had. So he actually essentially kills himself to make Cutshaw better, is what he's doing.
Yeah, well, I guess that's what you got out of it. To me, it was just kind of, it seemed like a jumble. Because
you really had to pay attention to what everybody was saying and like what, like all the conversations they were having. It does seem like that at first. Like I said, it seems very shambolic, but as it goes on, you figure out like what everything means that they're talking about.
There was a bunch of subliminal imagery too inside the castle where they're doing all this therapy. There's all these creepy fucking statues of like mourning figures in robes and damn demons and stuff. So I think there was some subliminal, not subliminal, but symbolic stuff going on in there too. But I don't, like you said, this movie didn't get me early on, so I just I could tell there was kind of a deeper undertone, or at least it was trying to have a deeper undertone. It wasn't for me.
I mean, yeah, pretty much the whole point of the story was redemption. I mean, they were saying that someone like Kane, who had done like these horribly evil things, that he could still be redeemed. He still helped people. And, you know, in Blatty's mind, because like I said, Blatty was a Catholic. He wrote, you know, The Exorcist was a very kind of Catholic movie. And so a lot of his stories like go into that, like that question of faith and redemption and everything like that. So that was kind of what he was getting at, that Cain was like an evil person, but he redeemed himself at the end. So it's almost kind of like, it's sad, but it's also kind of like a hopeful movie because it's like someone as evil as that could still redeem himself in the end. He still sacrificed himself for someone else. And you see at the end that indeed Cutshaw has, you know, has gotten better and has, like, you know, regained his sanity. Yeah. And he's back in uniform. He's essentially back. The card that he comes in still has, like, NASA plates. So he's essentially, like, gone back to being an astronaut or whatever it was. And maybe he's gotten over his phobia. And he goes into the castle, which is now abandoned, which implies, I guess, that all the inmates that were in there got better. You know, so that was kind of like a hopeful message as well. And then at the very end, when he gets back in the car, like after he's gone into the thing and looked around and like read the letter from Kane and everything, and he gets back in there and finds a St. Christopher medal, which hadn't been there before. Like it was left in the car. So like I said, that was like a supernatural or like a paranormal thing. And he turns it over and there's something on the back and he sees that it's the same St. Christopher medal that he gave to Kane early on in the movie, which proves to him that was the sign that Kane was contacting him essentially from the afterlife and telling him it's okay. You're not going to die alone. There is an afterlife and, you know, I'll be waiting. Or because he says in the letter, I'll see you again. So that's what he says. So that's, so even though, like I said, this is a weird, weird movie and it's not going to be like everybody's cup of tea because the tone of it is very strange. Even for 1980, because I know some weird movies came out in the 70s, like in early 80s, but this is a very strange, like you said, it's almost kind of like MASH, but it's a lot weirder than that.
Yeah.
And there's like a lot of weird dream imagery, like with the astronaut on the moon, and then there's like Jesus on the cross, like on the moon and shit like that.
The movie starts with a song that has lyrics.
Yeah.
You only saw that shit like in the 70s, and it's like country lyrics or... Or not really
like
country,
it's a folk song.
Like a folk song. And then it cuts out. And then it's just weird. The whole movie's weird.
It is very strangely edited.
Yeah.
But maybe, I think that's more a...
that was a product of its
that's
time.
A product of the time. That's yeah. Not so much, you know, because this is somebody, he made movies before. And but yeah. So this, like I said, this is free on Tubi at the moment. If you want to watch it, that's where I watched it. It might be free on YouTube too, but whatever. So if you are into The Exorcist or you've liked like any of his other books and you're kind of interested in that theme, this is kind of like The Exorcist meets MASH meets Altered States.
Meets Dirty Dozen.
Meets the Dirty Dozen.
Meets a biker movie.
Yeah. That biker bed at the end is kind of weird. Like the bikers are very strange. Like he has like the biker
eyeliner.
The biker at the end reminded me of like Phantom of the Paradise or I think it reminded me of Phantom of the Paradise.
Wes
a little bit.
Wes from Mad Max.
That too. Yeah. It was kind of like that because I can't think all those fucking biker gangs. I think it was only in movies biker gangs wearing all that like cat eye eyeliner. If you were a real biker, you got your ass kicked. Or wear an eyeliner. Oh, I wanted to say, too, I forgot to mention, other than, like, I said, like, my favorite crazy person in this was Jason Miller. Like I said, Damian Karras, who was doing the thing with the dogs, just because he put so much thought into what breed of dog was going to play each part in the play. And it just, I don't know, it made me laugh because it was almost, like, kind of perfect in the explanations he had. But there was another guy in it, and he only had, like, two scenes. He was the guy, like, near the beginning... He was, like, knocking holes in the walls of the castle, and he said it was because that he believed that he could walk through the walls, well, that anybody could walk through the walls, but he had tried to do it and had failed, so he was punishing the atoms of the walls by hitting them with the hammer so that next time the atoms would know to, like, move out of the way to let him through the wall. And then so just that whole conversation, and he was like super creepy and serious, like the way he was talking about it. And then like later on they had a scene where he was in the water and he was talking about how much better like the atoms of the water were because they just let you move around in there freely instead of like those fucking atoms in the wall that had to be beat up to like get them to fucking. And like I said, there's a scene, there's just this throwaway scene, it's like a second where like somebody just flies by in a jetpack. It's like the dude comes out with a Superman costume. He wants to be in the Shakespeare play too, and he wants to play Superman and like come in and like rescue somebody. And like fucking, it's just like crazy shit like that. So the first half of it is like just this really weird like comedy sort of, and then it just goes into this like weird. It's just a very, very, very strange movie. So if you're into like really, really weird movies from this time period, this might be up your alley. But like I said, don't hit me if you don't like it, because
yeah, I thought it was tiresome.
It's a very, very polarizing movie, and it takes a while to get into its groove, and you really have to like listen to all their conversations.
I thought it was tiresome. I thought the humor was kind of stale. So that's just,
it depended on the person. Like some of the shit was really funny. Like some of the shit that Scott Wilson's character said, like the astronaut, was really funny.
Just depends on your tastes. And but it wasn't to my taste.
It was, it's just a really weird movie. But like I said, if you want to watch it, it's on Tubi. Just check it out and tell me what you think about it. I'm really curious. And I was, like I said, forgive me, I can't remember who recommended that we do this, but it's been on my list for a really long time. So I'm finally getting around to it. So that'll do it. And remember, like, share, subscribe. And we'll see you next time.